welcome to Multisport Media with your hosts, Luke De Benedictus and Jack Carpenter.
Morning, guys. Thanks for joining us today for episode 145. We are here to review the Spartan Race World Championships that's just happened in Abu Dhabi. I'm joined by Jack. How are we, Jack?
Yo. Just literally missing the sand and the sun right now. It's been, what, how long? About 2 weeks, I think? It's taken us two weeks to get this recording out, but to be fair, it's been a busy few days, but I'm missing the sun. I'm missing the sun. I'm even missing like the V8 engines a little bit, but I'm definitely missing the sun. Give me sun and sand any day.
So, pretty much we're going to have a little chat about the event in Abu Dhabi, maybe a little bit of the stuff leading up to the event and around the event, and then also the race itself. We'll chat a bit about the main championship event and also the team event that happened the day afterwards as well. So, me and Jack flew out pretty much together on the 1st, I believe we flew out from Heathrow.
Yeah, Wednesday day, didn't we? Getting into Abu Dhabi sort of Wednesday night, Thursday morning.
Pretty late on Thursday, Wednesday, but we found food, so it wasn't a bad thing.
Yeah, that was the most random start of the week, actually. Was me and Luke were like, we're quite hungry. I know it's like 1 o'clock but in the morning, but for us, it's still like 6 o'clock, so we felt quite hungry. We were on 6 o'clock time, I suppose. So we went and got, and I had a mixed grill, which was amazing. but we went and found a restaurant, and we sat there and eating. And I was like, this is a bit weird. Everyone's still awake. Everyone's still up. I expected to be like really struggling for food like you do in most countries. And the thing was, like, that's the first thing that hit me was like, that country does not sleep. Does not sleep. And that should have been a bit of a starting omen for what's going to happen later on. But at the time, I was just excited to get there. Excited that all the COVID crap had, you know, we'd got through all that. We'd been clean. We'd got to fly because I don't know about you, leading up to the race, I was just stressing about PCRs and COVID tests, and I said to a few people, do you know what, this is taking the fun out of racing, because it's just like, I know it's serious and I know we take the test and blah blah blah, but forgetting all that, I'm not getting to that politics, all I'm saying is it does just take the fun out of actually just getting in a plane, going to a different country, you know, and enjoying being in a different country. And first part of me, I thought, do you know what, this is actually not worth it, but I take it back, it was worth it in various reasons, you know, why it was worth it, but it definitely was. So yeah, we got there, we found a hotel room, a funny story there, but we probably won't go into that. Food, and then we were set to go, Luke. It was like, I think we both sat there and went, right, now we're getting excited. Now we're getting excited. Because we've done a few before, we've both done Tahoe in separate years, we've done multiple European championships, so we know that buzz is a big championship course. You start to see, you know, like Lindsay's and Ryan's and John's, you're like, oh yes, it's starting to get real now. And it felt for me like that when we got there and we just got settled in. And I think you said the same thing to me, like, I'm ready now, which is funny because I've not been ready all year, but yeah, I've been ready now. So
Definitely. It was a bit of a drawn out process to get there with all the tests and stuff, but we made it. That was good. We got through the first day, and then the second day, we met up with Graham Roberts of Knox, of the newly formed Knox Enterprise coaching. We met up with Graham, who had a car, and then basically we rode with Graham to the event via getting Ryan and Lindsay on the way. Pretty much a nice little journey through the desert. And then we arrived. But as you said, we've been to like a few big Spartan events before, and they do put on like a good show. They had like a massive stage. They had like pretty much tons of food things there. I was very impressed with the food they had on offer. They had quite a lot of variety. I think I ate about four things of pasta. It was so good. And I think I visited that protein house
quite a few times. You had shares in America, mate.
Yeah. They had a lot going on. I'm not too sure what was happening in the village. There were plenty of stalls, but apart from the food, there wasn't too much else happening. The one nice thing I did see was the coaching corner. They had a spear.
Yes, they did.
everybody loves to throw a spear before the race, but you're not allowed, per se. So it was great to have one in the corner where people could go, just throw a couple of spears, get their iron, and kind of enjoy it. But
and we went a few spears, didn't we, mate? Which makes a big difference if you can do that before a race. Cause that's the most nervous thing, isn't it? That bloody spear throw. But you know what? I didn't know what to expect. I mean, if you read reports 2 years ago, because you got to remember this was supposed to happen last year, but because of COVID, it got cancelled. So I think the people that have made the trip out here were expecting something. Now, I don't know what they've built up in their head, but because I'm used to Spartan, I didn't expect too much. Does that make sense? Yeah. It sounds horrible because they put on a great, great race, and we'll explain that later. But what I mean is you don't want to get your hopes up too much. You know, you see pictures and you see this and you see that. Plus, I've done Tahoe, you know, the previous World Championship venue, and that was amazing. You know, like, you know, it's very much built up. The infrastructure's there. It's an Olympic village area. You know, that was amazing. Yeah, yeah. We knew this was going to be in the middle of the desert with tents. So it was like, well, okay, so you're not going to have that local pizzeria and you're not going to have a nice comfy bed to go back to, blah, 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 blah. So I tried not to think about it too much. And I think the problem is we probably mixed ourselves with people and a few sort of American athletes, if you like, that were probably expecting more than what was there. So there was a bit of a dampener about tents and mix up with air cons, and this is not my tent. And this, I mean, we got moved 3-4 times, didn't we, in tents? Ultimately, I wasn't there for, you know, a Ritz holiday. I was there to race. So at the end of the day, where you sleep, and I don't know. I don't know if the Brits are just better at roughing it. I don't know if we're just used to just, you know, roughing it. I don't know. But yeah, I just think that to me didn't really take anything away from it for me, because for me it was about the race. So that initial, you know, tent, blah blah. And I mean, I helped the other team, UK, if we're going to call them that, TGBR, you know, your Libby's, your Dasses. I helped them not move to their tent because it was about 4 miles the other direction. You know, and I did feel like, Spartan probably could have done this a bit better. Don't get me wrong there. But from looking inside out, I think they were also a bit like, you know, and I can't imagine trying to put on something that size and having all the athletes there going, where's this? Where's that? Where's this? Where's that? You know, you can imagine it's a proper hard job. So with that in mind, I actually don't think they did a bad job. And I'll probably be slated for saying that, but I don't actually think they did a bad job at all. At tents and accommodation and all that. I mean, they messed up on a few things, and we can talk about the Gary boys in a minute. But again, I don't think Spartan, they either knew about it and they just sort of ignored it, or they thought they might go away, or they might have been offered help by the army and police. I don't know. No one knows. Yeah. We're not going to know. But either way, basically, if you haven't heard about it now, from about 12 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night through to about 2 or 3 or 4 in the morning, basically, we can only describe being in Sainsbury's car park at about 8 o'clock when all the chavs are revving their engines.
Ragging it.
The car park. But they're all like Clios and Renault Clios and, you know, okay, you probably get the Beamers now, we're a bit older. But when I was 16, it was all about the Renault Clios and the Novas and that, blah, blah, blah. But imagine that in a 4x4 with a
big exhaust.
An Emirati has got actually lots of money, so you can put a 5.8 litre, you know, V8 fucking engine in a 4x4 and rag it as hard as you can behind your tent that you're trying to sleep in, knowing that we're trying to sleep. You know, I got the feeling that was happening on purpose, and of clearly it was. They were there to wind us up. They didn't want us there. We'd basically set up Tent City in the middle of their playground. I understand it from a local point of view, but I do think Spartan could have taken some measures maybe, but whether they didn't know, we don't know, we're never going to know. But to be fair, for me, it added to the experience a little bit as well. It added to that bit of everyone went through the same thing. Everyone from Ryan Atkins and Lindsay all the way through to the, you know, the last person come through that race tape on the age group or open wave, you know, everyone went through that same thing, you know. So you can't use an excuse. It's not like, oh, I got a bad night's sleep because I was in the tent. I got a good night's sleep because I was in the Ritz. You know, like, everyone was in the same situation, unless you got a hell toe in. But, like, I heard a few people like Mark Dixon and Andrea say they got the hotel the night before, so the morning of they drove. But screw driving to that desert at freaking in that morning of, because It was a good 2 or 3 hour drive. It was horrendous. It was hot in a car. I like the fact that we were there. We got settled. We were mingling. It was great.
Most people that came in from hotels that were like 30 minutes or even in Abu Dhabi, which was on the coach, they came in and they were really like cutting it fine, like 40 minutes before the start of the race, something like that. So it was touch and go. But yeah, you're right. Spartan did a good job per se, I think. Without having the event happening, it's very hard to see what's going to happen. Like, there's no one in the tent, so you don't worry about the tents until 300 athletes are over there. Now the tents are a problem because there's 300 athletes going, oh, it's really loud.
So exactly.
I think, if anything, they'll learn from the experience of being there. They could have probably had somebody manning the tents as a Spartan employee in that area to direct you to your tents, to check
that, the tent. That was a complete fuck up, wasn't it? Let's be fair.
Yeah, it kind of just went, oh, you're over there, but there was a lot of tent swapping and certain things going on, and then maybe a little shuttle from the registration to the tents for the people that had to carry tents to the other side.
What they should have done is just hire the Gary boys to give us a trip from the tents to the venue. You know, just to hire a couple of those guys just to rag it between the strokes. Boom, sorted. They take a few bits of money for it.
There you go.
You get a little experience trip out of it as well.
Yeah. Let's paint a little picture of what was out there. So as you came in, basically it's kind of a flat area where they've managed to concrete everything and then have sand bits where the tents are at the top. As we come in, you've got like a little mini supermarket, and then you've got the big festival area where registration is. And then behind the registration is a massive dune, which is, I can't even start to describe how big this dune is.
It's quarter of a mile up, I think, 200 40 meters.
Looked massive from the bottom, and it was completely almost vertical. And the race attached to this dune a couple of times. And then you had a few bits of the race. So right at the festival area was a couple of obstacles. And then you had a finish line as well. And that was our start point, kind of on the flat section.
To go back a bit further than that, what I would say is with the concrete and the festival area, I think what this place is used for before is for the Gary boys to come and rev around the dunes. So I think it's a purpose-built sort of car park, but it's, as Luke's saying, it's a bit odd. It's basically a highway in the middle of the desert just going out to nowhere for about, 2 hours, you know. Yep. So you can imagine a nice road going out into a desert, and then literally you get to the end and there's a slab of concrete, which is effectively a car park, and then a few vendors in there. They do like rallies and things like that. So the venue is actually set up for having lots of people down there, definitely. Yeah.
I think it's a rally section, and it's like supposed to be dirt bike racing and sand bike. And
it's where you go if you want to go sand duning, sand boarding, sand racing, whatever it is. Actually, really interesting. If you go on YouTube, I have done since and looked up Liwa Morab, where it is dune.
Morab.
There are some amazing races and people trying to get up it and down it. It looks quite cool. And actually, if you hear that noise, that's what we heard going over and over again. But so I think that's the sort of what it's made for. So what Spartan had done is festival in the middle, and we looked at it, didn't we, on the course map, and it looked like one big circle. And we were like, well, what else can they do? There is no trees. There's no water. It literally is just sand and dunes. Yeah. And it literally was just that. But I thought they'd made quite a nice course, so it sort of went, like you say, went out quite flat, slow climb initially, get you into it, then it started hit some of the softer stand, then you sort of came round back into the festival down that dune at a bit of an angle, if you'd like to say, and then you did the spear, which is brutal, by the way, and then straight back out up that high horrible dune, which I actually think is worse than the cliff climb, but there you go, out there, and then back round and down the dune. So it's sort of a messed up figure of eight, if you like.
It was like two loops from one location. So you went out and back, in like a double circle, basically. But yeah, so let's talk about the race. So start of the race, different kind of time. We started at 3 p.m.
Which is odd. I liked it.
I'm still not too sure. It was very different. It was like in the morning, we could chill. We could go have food. There wasn't get up, go, get to the start line, right, let's get going. So yeah, definitely different. They kind of held us at the start line for a little bit to get all the start line stuff going, and then we kind of just went straight away. What did you think? I don't think anybody went off too fast. We kind of spread out quite early, though. As soon as we hit the first hand, I think everybody was almost in a line.
Well, one thing like that, what I found was, like, unlike any other Spartan race I've done, even Tahoe, you know, because the course, they had marked the course, obviously, and actually thought the course marking was pretty awesome. There was no point where I went, oh shit, where am I going? You know, I didn't have to worry about course tape whatsoever. It was so clearly marked, and they'd done a very good job of marking half marathon distance of white tape, because they could have got that wrong. It could have gone horribly wrong, in fact. But I didn't hear of anyone getting lost. So if you did, let us know. That'd be quite an interesting story. But are they still going? They're so wide, you could actually fit 50 people across on the same track. You know, so. Oh. Although we tend to stay quite together. And I had this joke with Fergal before the race. I said, the stupid thing is, you can be in any race, especially these international races or European races, and me and Luke will always bump into each other at some point. It's almost like you've got a British homing beacon on us. It's like, and that's what happens. You look around the race and you've got all these people there. And I look around and I could see Das, Mark, you. It was like, this is so weird. Why am I race feel like I'm in a race against all these British athletes?
You just want to get used to the same pace.
For a while, we were all pretty much just, I mean, I don't know about you, but I can name all five people that I was racing with for most of the race. You know, yes, we were backwards and forwards. Yes, we were a bit slower and faster on certain segments. But in general, I think I stayed with the same five people for most of that race.
I kind of got probably... So the race went off. We hit, like, walls. Then it was more sand running. Then it was monkey bars.
Cargo. Those monkey bars nearly caught me out, by the way. They were so bloody wide. I was like, whoa, hoppa.
Yeah, they changed them up. So obviously they've done the monkey bars beast mode. So it is up and down, up and down, up and down.
There were some small gaps and big gaps. So you got a bit like, well, this is easy. And then all of a sudden there's a big gap all the way up.
And then we went to cargo flip, so straight up, straight down. And then it was a bit of a trudge up. So pretty much I hit cargo flip, and then my race kind of unraveled as I went up to the bucket. There was like quite a lot of trudging, quite deep sand up to the bucket.
That was the section I did for the team race. And actually doing it the second day, I was like, shit, did I really do this yesterday? Like, you know how you sort of forget that you've done so much? It's a bit like watching the men's race back. You're like, Christ, that actually looks fucking huge. You know, when you're doing it and you're so excited and adrenaline. But I mean, at that point, you're still, what, 3 mile in? So you're still like, whoa, you know. But yeah, looking back now, I'm like, yeah, that was a lot of trudging. And it was almost like up, down, up, down. So as quick as you were running down quite fast, you know, you could get to 6.5 minute mile pace. All of a sudden, you're doing 10 minute mile pace because you're going up again. That was a hard section, actually. The bucket carry, run, bucket carry, run, rock wall into the sandbag. Oh,
it was a vertical wall, and then we went over to. There was a little bit of salt flats there, but they kind of disappeared quite quickly.
Yeah, the salt flats felt very like they weren't there to me.
Yeah, there was two sections of salt flats pretty much only on the first loop. And albeit they were fast, I did manage to get my pace back up on the salt flats, but they just didn't really, there per se wasn't enough for fast, fast running. But there was a lot more trudging and sand. So pretty much, we did that bit. Then we went round. I think by this point, by I got to the bucket, when I came down the hill, I think you had just finished your bucket.
So we just swapped places. I could see
Fergal just in front, and then Mark, and then because I came down to the bucket and I'd already like lost contact with you guys, and I was like, oh shit, this is going to move. So I kind of like did the bucket, came round. And I think just by then, when I managed to get up on the salt flats, then we hit the sand again.
Yeah.
And then we went into a bit more of a climb, and then we went into the sandbag carry, which started on a hill.
Yeah.
And that just kind of like killed me dead, because I ended up walking the hill part, and that just lost me so much time.
I would just like to point out just there, well, to the world, I am the fifth fastest carrier on that bucket and the third fastest carrier on that sand.
Now, was it on the
team? I'm taking that.
Was it on the team or the day?
Well, on both. So, unfortunately, Strava, unless you pay for the premium, it just takes your best time, doesn't it? So, either the third. But actually, I looked to the both days, and yeah, I'm in top five for both on both days. So that's pretty good. I'm happy with that. Happy.
Yeah, they were the bucket was nice because it was on a flat one. The sandbag, this first sandbag was pretty brutal because that up was crazy.
Yeah.
Then the down bit was nice.
Yeah. I will say I'm not going to take on any of those guys one on one, because I'm pretty sure if Ryan Atkins put his mind to it, he'd kick my ass one on one. I'm just saying, on the time, I beat him.
on Strava, if it's not on Strava,
it doesn't count.
So yeah, then we hit that, and then was into a bit of the salt flats again. Then it was
Atlas
Stone carry, yeah, which was just kind of okay. It wasn't crazy. It's not super heavy.
We found out afterwards. Did you think that the carries are quite light? Like, let's forget the last bag because that was ridiculous. But in general, I thought the carries, I don't know if it's just because, again, we've said this on the podcast before, because we're British and used to very heavy carries, I didn't find the hoist. No. Yeah, the bucket was probably heavy, but I think that's probably because they filled it with sand to the brim.
Yeah, true. No, everything they found weight-wise was pretty much fine. The bucket was kind of our normal heaviness.
Yes.
The sandbag, we always carry that weight of sandbag. The hoist I found quite easy. Yeah. I thought that was pretty nice, actually. They'd the railings were really tight into the ground.
Yeah, they bolted down, weren't they?
Yeah, they put like stanchions in, so they were completely unmovable. So when I put my foot on the railing, it just went up. I was like,
yeah. I found that.
And at the end of the race, you didn't want to struggle.
No, I mean, if you watched Ryan Atkins, how he did it, he just did it hand to hand. He didn't even put his back down. It was like, that just shows you, not saying it was light, I'm just saying that just proves you how much traction you could get from pulling.
Proves bicep wins biceps win races.
Bicep wins, yeah, and it very much did, because I tell you what, Sergey's not slow.
Yeah, we'll go into the top 10 in a minute. We'll just reel off like kind of our bit of race, and so then we came down. What was your kind of turning point? Did you think the spear was I think the spear was pretty much everybody's kind of like weight.
Well, for me, I don't know about you, that's the first ever race that I had to dig in deep. Like, for instance, Wales, the beast at Wales when I was second, I was thinking all the time, oh God, this is, I was happy because it's like, this is a good point to race. This is a good point. Whereas in this beast, which was, you know, 2-3 weeks later, I'm always thinking, Christ, I've just got to keep going. I don't care about my pace. I've just got to keep my legs moving, because the problem is when you start to give up, not give up, but when you start to settle is a good word. When you start to go, do you know what? I'm happy just to finish. Then shit goes horribly wrong. And I held that feeling off until the last 200 meters. and for me, I again got a bit of buzz like Wales. So what happened for me was at that point, I was past Fergal and I was past Mark, and I could see Das was waning. And I was like, do you know what? I've got these boys. I'm picking them off one by one. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling fit. We came down that the barbed wire crawl. Yeah. And I saw someone at the top there, Graham. He shouted to me, come on, Jack, you're doing really well. They're just ahead, blah, blah, blah. So that gave me a bit of a buzz. I came up. We did that horrible traverse across that real soft sand down into the spear. And I could see Das doing burpees. So I was like, ah, Das is Mr. Spear. Brilliant. Yeah. Mark had just thrown his burpee, a spear, and was doing burpees. So at that point, it was like, and I was coming across that ridge. Yeah. I had Fergal literally just on my back, and he was like, come on, Jack, come on. So we sort of worked in together. I don't know if Fergal missed the spear. No, he hit the spear. So me and Fergal both hit the spear at the same time and went up. Because basically, guys, I kid you not, that must be the worst place to miss a spear in the world, because the penalty loop is 30 burpees going into the most horrendous, and all I can tell you,
it vertical climb.
Vertical climb, so much so that it basically put everyone on their hands and knees.
Yeah.
You know,
I
actually nearly caught Ramblance and Mark at one point because he looked like he was just going to fucking keel over. So anyway, yeah, so up the hill, and that's where Fergal, fair play to the guy, he was like, no fucking about with this. He just fucking ran up the hill. Not even like, how are you doing this? Like, literally, trudged up the hill, hands on knees, feet, and everyone else was hand crawling. I mean, you had at that point Ian Hosek, me, Jan Dickman, Austin Azar, Das, we're all hands, feet. Fergal just like twinkle toes up. Okay. I'm like, fuck, I should have been a dancer. So yeah, fair play to Fergal. That's where he got the lead and held on from there. But for me, that if I'd missed that spear, that would have been game over. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It was so on the point of you did not want to miss that.
Well, at this point, while you guys were having a nice little battle, I was still struggling back in the pack. I think when pretty much on the carry, I kind of like lost you guys on that bit. And I just literally was on my own almost.
Yeah.
Which kind of sucked. And I kind of slowed. And
that's
then
a horrible place to be.
Yeah. I think what I've worked out is I lost most of my time on the second loop because I just really was literally on my own. And I picked off a few people. I think I picked off four or five people as I was going on that second lap. But yeah, I came down to the spear probably, it must have been 5 or so minutes after you guys had already gone.
Right.
I think you guys had already gone up the hill, or you might have been at the top of the hill when I came down to the rope. So it was already a big gap then. And I hit the spear, which was fucking amazing. I was not looking forward to doing burpees if so. I was like, yep. Really happy I hit the spear. Then I hit that hill and I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
This is bad.
It's like Morzine all over again, isn't it?
It was worse. I would rather have done Morzine again.
What? No.
I would rather do the Morzine Ultra than do that hill again.
Double Ultra.
It's the sand. You literally put your foot in it and then it slips.
Yeah.
I was like,
there's I find myself changing different techniques. So like a walk, a run, a jog, a sand crawl. And there was just no techniques to the point of my fingers were actually hurting for a while because I was digging my fingers in like claws.
Yeah.
If I could grab the sand. But then I'm like, yeah, my fingers are hurting.
Can I hold this sand?
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then it was up the hill and it was pretty much.
Then it got a bit nicer, didn't it? It got a bit better. In my head, I'm going, yes, we're over halfway. That's 7 miles. We've only got a few more miles to go. But then it got shit.
Yes. Then I don't know. I can't even remember many obstacles.
There wasn't. And I'll tell you for why. And this is what we've worked out, realized afterwards, is what I hadn't realized. It lost all the American obstacles in the container ship. So somewhere in Saudi Arabia right now is a load of Spartan obstacles. If I get hold of them, great, send them to Feel Fit. but in general, what they've done is gone to Saudi Arabia and bought all their old obstacles off them from a couple of years ago, which is why on that back end, it was very obstacle sparse. It might have been a bit of trail race. We had a couple of kickers, didn't we? We had one wall, a couple of those
twister, one wall.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Literally.
I almost can't remember doing too many obstacles on the back end.
There was none.
Is what is. If that's what they had, then I would have loved to have seen Ape Hanger.
An egg beater. Perfect. Yeah.
It was. But I think the bit that absolutely devastated me was
the cliff climb.
The cliff climb. Because there's been some pictures, there's some videos of it, and it was just brutal. Like, again, putting your foot in it, the sand just goes down. And then I got on the ropes. They put some ropes about one third of the way down.
Yeah, 100 meters,
I got on the rope and I was like, okay, I can pull myself up this now. That made no fucking difference. I stood up and still went down again. I was like, oh my God, this is going to be a struggle.
Those ropes are actually harder because the problem is when you were going up with your hand, you could use both hands for traction. As soon as you put your hand on the rope, it was like, well, now my feet are sinking in.
Yeah. Well, it's because you're taking your weight. You're like, you're spreading out because you're crawling. Then you're standing up and all your weight's on your feet and you're like, oh no, I've just made a terrible error.
I actually went up the wrong side. I actually went up the right side. What I realised is when people were over the crest of the hill and going left, I was like, shit, I'm going to have to make my way left to get on the right side of the ropes. Yeah, so I sort of did a traverse across the ropes to get to the right side. But yeah, that was brutal. And the best bit was that whole, and if I could take a picture, it would be amazing. I looked down under my legs because, you know, when you're so steep, you can look between your legs and see your, kiss your ass goodbye, basically. But I could see Leon. I could see Ian Hosek, I could see us, and it was just a brilliant picture of like all these athletes just dying massively on this horrible thing, which wasn't even an obstacle. It was just a slack line, but
just a hill.
Yeah, it was a great picture. Would have made a great picture. Then that's, for me, that's when it's like, right, surely there's only 3 miles of this left. Yeah. But that 3 mile has possibly been the worst 5K of my life.
I think I looked at my watch and about an hour in, I'd done about 5 miles.
Yeah.
And then I think when I got to the spear, I was probably, that was 2 more miles, probably an hour and like 20 something.
But I don't know if you'd noticed, either Spartan were having a funny play with our minds or someone had moved a tape, because one of the mile markers said 13.
Yeah.
And there was no fucking way it was 13 miles. No way.
So the mile markers on the course actually went up to 14 before you even got down the crest.
Yeah.
So they had it wrong. But I think on my watch, it was actually a roundabout correct mileage per se, if you had gone all part of the course. The one sneaky little bit that they added in was the last sandbag.
Oh, and I kept saying to Mark, because at that point, right, so I said to you at the start, do I need a head torch? Because they were like, you must wear a head torch, it gets dark by 5. And I'm like, oh no, if we go off at 3, 4, 5, that gives me 3 hours to finish this race. So in my head, I wanted to get back, one, before Lindsay Webster passed me, because that means I was been chipped on race, not on time, but on chip. And secondly, before I need to put a head torch on. And we just got off Twister, and I looked at Mark, and Mark looked at me, and he went, get your head torch out, Jack. I haven't got one, mate. So that was the reason why, not saying I could have got away from Mark, but we made a decision to stay together because it was only us two out there and he was the only one with a head torch. So I was like, Mark, I've got to stay with you. So we sort of did that last sort of 2K together. The fact that when I passed this, picked the sandbag up and got massive cramp, he didn't stay with me then, did he? He fucked off then, didn't he? But...
you wasn't any hope then.
I mean, I love a carry, guys. I know I would say, give me a carry. And I even said on the Facebook Live before, make that a double. I honestly think if they'd made that a double sandbag carry, I'd still be there now. I picked up that bag and I was suffering from cramp. And I haven't suffered from cramp like that since my first Windsor race in 2016. I do not think, and that just means it's not electrolytes because I drank so much. I felt so good. I mean, personally, I felt I dealt with the weather quite well. Mm. Some people did not. There were some big names just dropping left, right and centre. It only takes a look at the results to see who did well and who didn't. But in general, I thought I'd done quite with hydration and fluids and blah, blah, blah. But honestly, I just think it was that relentless sand that just completely got my hamstrings. And I picked that bag up, and as soon as I put it on my back, my hamstrings just fucking seized. And honestly, I couldn't even move my knee. So there was no way I was even climbing up that little dune. And I said to Mark, I'm done. I actually can't move. And he sort of went, all right, and just carried on. Great. Thanks, Mark. I just threw the bag up. I threw the bag up, climbed, which took me about 3 minutes. And then I managed to get up on my back and I did the downhill bit. But, oh my God, what the worst feeling in the world, knowing the finishing line is just there.
Yeah, I know.
And it's like, why can't I move right now? And that's when Lindsay Webster caught me up and I was like, you kidding me? I need a head torch. Lindsay's past me and I can't move. This is the worst race ever.
Well, you was close to the end because that sandbag, which was like sneaky, because I was running all that way and I was like, they've missed out a second sandbag.
They haven't put it in.
Oh, they haven't put it in. Where is it going to be? And then bang, I forgot about Twister as well. I came around the corner and Twister was there. I was like, oh, wow, this is fun. I can actually do an obstacle after this massive sand race. So that was pretty good. And then, yeah, literally, it was down that big dune. So we went down the massive dune, which was really fun. I enjoyed it. Really good fun. And then you had a little gauntlet, per se, which was hoist into... Monkey in the middle style, which was really good. I enjoyed that they mixed it up. They had monkey bars, twister into rings.
Monkey with a twist, they called it.
Which was great fun. I really enjoyed that they mixed the two rigs up that they had on course. And then it was slip wall and then the finish. But weirdly, the finish was around the corner, which I think a lot of people got confused because you had the fire jump and then you had to go around the corner. So I saw a lot of people jump the fire and then go, where's the finish line? So then they went went around the corner to the finish and then your day was done. But did you get confused with where the finish was?
I think everyone did because you jumped that fire and it was like, even Ryan Atkins, if you look on the live, he puts his arms up to say, where's the finish? Yeah, it's a bit, they did that in Ireland, didn't they? Do you remember when they put the fire, fit like, there are obviously some sort of fire risk. They weren't allowed to have the fire close to the stand, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Or on the concrete. Because the fire was on the last bit of sand before it went to concrete.
So I'm assuming they weren't allowed to have it close to the sand for some reason. But it is what it is. I mean, I suppose Spartan has become famous for the fire jump, hasn't it? And it wouldn't have hurt if they didn't have a fire jump, to be fair. But
They said they didn't have it for the opener age group. They only had it for... They didn't have it for the team either, I don't think. I think it was just literally the elite race. They did for the team?
No, they didn't. You ran over it. I didn't even run over it.
I can't remember.
I remember not being able to lift my legs over the damn thing. I ran through the fire. I didn't jump it. I couldn't even lift my legs.
I saw a lot of people run straight through the fire.
Yeah.
All right. So before we have a little chat about the results of the top 10, top 20, there is the male live video, the YouTube highlights, which is a great little watch.
There are a lot of mistakes, but you get the idea of what's going on.
There's a few little mistakes in the commentary, but you get a good idea of what's going on and how it was at like the front of the race, them battling it out. But before we do that, Jack, how do you think that race was? Where does that race rank for you in races that Spartan have put on?
I knew you were going to ask me that.
Is that the best race? Is it the hardest race? Is it a race that you'd do again?
I think from start to finish, I think it has to be one of the hardest races I've ever done. I agree with you. Oh, no, I agree with me. I still think Morzine, that sandbag and Morzine, was the worst individual section of a race I've ever done. I didn't mind the cliff climb. I was with the right people. We had a joke and a laugh. I think if I'd been suffering more, that cliff climb could have been horrendous.
I was suffering and I was on my own.
It
really hurts.
And that just shows you, like, yes, we're all racing and yes, we're all going to places, but if you're with a group of like-minded mates that you're just sort of racing with, it just shows you how it can take your mind away from that suffering place and turn it into something fun that you're all doing together. So, yeah, no, I think from a race A to B, if you say to me, what's the hardest 13, well, beast course you've ever done, I would say Abu Dhabi for sure. Just the relentless of the sand. I was a bit blasé going into the race. I hadn't really done much training for this. I hadn't run any sand really, which is stupid considering I live on the beach. But I sort of got the mindset that, you know, there's not a lot out there you can train for. That was not trainable. The heat was different to a sauna. You won't find sand dunes like that anywhere in England.
Not for that distance. You might find a dune or two, but nothing.
If you look at the guys that did well, fair play to the guys that did well. If you look at like Fergal and Mark Dixon, who finished just ahead of me, they had both been going down to Camber Sands, and Mark had did a lot of sandbag running. So clearly it does work because it helped Mark on the day, 100%. So I'm not saying it doesn't. All I'm saying is, if it's there next year and it's the same similar sort of event, then I know now that I need to do a little bit more strengthening for stag running.
Yeah, I think per se, the race isn't a pure running race. It's more of a power race.
Yeah.
If you're more of a power runner, or you've got more powerful kind of hiking or legs to drive, you probably end up doing better at this.
That reflects in the results. You know, even if you
look at
the John and Atkins, you know, I would say John's a much better pure athlete, running athlete than Atkins. But Atkins won on the day because if he had that power and that determination, you know, to keep pushing.
Definitely. So let's delve into the male results then. Let's go, we'll go top 10 because there's plenty of results we could talk about from there. So Atkins taking home his first ever Spartan World Championship title after being second 5 times, which is pretty crazy that he's been second that many times. But yes,
and deserved.
Very, very deserved. Like I said before, we were lucky enough to travel with them up to the race, and it really surprised me, thinking back on it, how calm they both were going into that event.
Yeah,
Ryan and Lindsay, which was pretty crazy that they both ended up winning.
More on Lindsay's side, I think, as well, considering she, you know, look, you could probably agree, and she probably won't mind us saying, her brain was in Christmas mode for a lot of that trip.
Yes, she was thinking ahead, but
so seconds.
Second, we had Sergio Pellegrin,
who, let's be fair, we both said was one to watch, and we even said to Ryan, didn't we, the morning of. He's like, who's going to be my closest competitor? I was like, Sergey, definitely, 100%.
But and he was. Yeah. The performance from Sergey, we'll probably go into a bit more depth soon, but 32 seconds behind Ryan is amazing, seeing as the amount of effort Ryan put into that
and
race.
And actually, if you look at that 32 seconds, watching Sergey on the monkey in the middle, the twister bit, he slowed right down because he knew he couldn't catch Ryan.
As soon as he saw Ryan bicep up the hoist, he went, oh, shit. So I think, he could have been 10 seconds.
Yeah.
The gap was probably 10 seconds.
A lot closer than what their results look,
definitely.
But the big gap is the surprise here, is John.
Yeah, you had about 6 minutes to John there, and then it kind of got even bigger. So Gregory Basilico from France,
who is my standout racer of the whole race.
That is, you know, he had an amazing race.
Him and the next one.
Yes. So Gregory was 9 minutes down on John, but a lot of that was he missed the spear. He was in massive contention to be on that podium if he had hit that spear.
And I tell you what, that boy is young. He is young. Yeah. He's hungry. He can carry like an absolute beast, and he's as small as Atkins, if not smaller.
It's probably smaller than Atkins.
Yeah, I reckon he's faster. I generally think you give that boy a couple of years, if he trains OCR specifically, he can be a future world champ, 100%.
We'll probably try and see if we can get him on if he's keen. So number 5, Nicolai Dam, amazing from him, 5th place. He was only, less than a minute behind Gregory Basilico, which is amazing. If Gregory is like your standout athlete.
Yeah.
Albert Soleil, Artem Torsaka from Belarus, Grzegorz Szczesnia from Poland.
Isn't he the owner of Bicep Race?
He's owner of Barbarian Race. He is. So, we'll probably chat about Artem. So, Artem Trier is from Belarus. So, they do bison race in Belarus, which is Spartan-esque style race, I guess. A lot of carries, but they have a lot more rigs in that kind of race.
Yeah.
He does really well there, and he seems to race more at... I've seen him race more at, like, championship events and local kind of events to Belarus. So, he was only 20 seconds behind Albert Soleil, and Gregor Cecilia, the Polish guy, was only 5 seconds behind him. So that was super close. You had 3 athletes on 2 hours, 33 minutes within seconds of each other.
Yeah,
that's crazy. Is pretty crazy. Then you had Luca Plescarida from Italy, who came second at the Euros.
Yeah.
And then rounding out the top 10 was Jeremy Gachet.
Who's another great, that's another great race that is from Jerry.
Yeah, an amazing race to pull in the top 10. But look, if you're looking at those top 10 from the males, there is pretty much one North American in there with nine Europeans.
He's Canadian. He's not even North American. He's Canadian. America, start trying to claim him.
They're trying to claim him, obviously. But yeah, that's nine Europeans. You've got to go down to, where are we going to? 14th is the first US male, which is Mark Gaudet. Amazing run from him, seeing as he won the Ultra World Championship no longer than 2 months ago.
Yeah.
And then you had Logan Broadbent in 16th.
Who had a nightmare with the heat, I'll point out.
Yes, he did have a pretty terrible. But that's it. Like, they were probably the two big names from North America, with Ian Hosek as well. And then in between them, you had Jesse Bruce, a Canadian guy as well. So they pretty much, we kind of said it before, Europeans would really come to the fore in this event, not having to travel all that way to America. Might have made a big difference, but we'll never know. I don't really think the travel would have made huge. A lot of people like Ryan and Lindsay, they got there, what, a week before? Or a few?
There wasn't even that, I don't think. A couple of days, I think.
They were there before, though. They were like ready for the event and stuff. Let's flip to the women's. So top 10, Lindsay Webster claiming her third Spartan Race World Championship title. Congratulations to her.
And she romped it. She absolutely romped it.
She did.
Ran that sandbag like it wasn't even there. Ridiculous.
So, yeah, she was about 2 minutes or so in front of the next, the second place lady, who was Annie Duby from the USA.
Yeah.
Amazing result from her, who she also came second in the North American Championships. So, two amazing results in big championship events. And you had Alisa Petrova from Russia. Yeah. In 2:43, so not a huge gap like in the men's. We were a bit closer with the women's gap. They were a bit more congested together.
So Alyssa's obviously partner with Sergei Peregrin, so they've obviously been training together.
Yeah.
Watch this space, because she'll get quicker and better.
Yeah, and you see Alyssa's been over doing the other races in the UAE before, so she's got good. She obviously had good knowledge of like the terrain and running out there. So her and Sergei seem to be doing quite a lot of the races in the UAE and around. So it's no surprise they both did really well. Then you had Emma Cook-Clark coming in fourth, the North American champion. Then you had Miriam Guillaume-Bosse fifth. Miriam, oh my God, she is amazing. Fifth place. And how old is Miriam?
She's retired three times.
she's retired three times, and she told us that she basically just spent all year eating fruit and chilling on her island with Jackie.
Yeah.
Because of COVID rules, not being able to get out too much. But yeah, to come fifth in like a major championship after doing almost no racing this year is amazing.
Yeah.
Then you had Natalia Stutilenka from Russia. Faye Stenin. Seventh, and then you had Ida in eighth from Denmark, and then you had Janka Pavlova from Slovenia in ninth, and then you had Ivana Karalic from Serbia in 10th. That's your top 10 females. So
what we just proved actually is the American girls travel better than American guys.
Well, there's only one American girl in there.
Okay, Canadian. Oh yeah, because Emma Cook-Clark's Canadian.
She is. North Americans.
Just say America from that part of the world. Not European. Non-European.
So North Americans in the ladies, you actually had four. Three Canadians, one American out of the top 10. And then you had two Russians, a Danish, a Slovenian, and a Serbian in there as well.
So we're just proving that, like, actually, these European, I mean, we say it all the time, America, like, when you listen to, like, different prediction podcasts, I'll put it out there in America, it's all America, 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 America. Let's take Ryan away, because one, he's Canadian, and two, he's world class. and Lindsay. I'll put Lindsay in there. I would actually say Lindsay's a better athlete than Ryan. But do you know what I mean? In ratios, in terms, I mean. But it just proves that there are some serious shit-hot Europeans out there that get so sort of like either missed or not looked at because they're not American. You know, I honestly think if you take that top 10 of girls and top 10 of guys into a US series, you'd see a massive mix-up.
Yeah, I definitely think you're looking at those, the top girls, top guys, probably could compete in the US series races. But I think the whole problem is that we see the US series because it's gets a lot of coverage. It gets highlight shows. We see that as like the creme de la creme of Spartan racing, like general races. US series is like the one. Everyone watches the highlights normally, see that kind of stuff. But some of the battles they have in Spain, Italy, France, in some of those races is absolutely amazing. I really think if, say, the Spanish National Series got a lot more coverage, more prize money, because the prize money in America is pretty
good.
It's like $3,000 for a race for the US National Series. If you win a race, that's more than our prize money for an overall series win. That's double overall UK series win, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
So that's just a single race. But America, it's an American company. Obviously, they are quite far ahead in their stage of development. We're just getting there. And then you've got Europe as well getting there. They've been a little bit further ahead of us. But yeah, I think if we get those races and push them forwards, you'd have like such a competitive series. What I would love to see is a World Series.
Yeah.
One race America, one race Spain, one race France, UK. Right, five races around the globe. They're your global series. I'm getting ahead of myself. It's because I watched the PTO announce their series yesterday for the triathlon. And done exactly that. So
I really wish they'd freaking bring Spartan Cross, though. I said to a couple of the Americans, in Abu Dhabi, I was like, how cool would this venue be right now if we could all go race short course teamed Spartan Cross? Yeah. You know, how cool would it be? They need to bring that. Spartan, Dave Watson, sort it out. We want short course, speed, cross country. We want it.
Well, now you've mentioned the team, we'll delve into that because we are cracking on, but we'll talk about the team event and the structure around it. So team event was team of three, one female, two guys, two females, one guy. You just had to have a female in your team. It was split into three legs around the super distance course, which was already marked out, which basically was the first loop of the beast. So you finished on a rope climb, spear, hoist, rig, slip wall, finish line. So we had one section each. They were differing in distance. Some of them were a little longer than advertised. We were lucky enough to team up with Nikki Johnson. Nikki took our team out from the start line. Quite a lot. The start line to the first bit was the shorter distance, but it was quite up and down. Quite a lot of teams did the same as we did. They went female off the start line and then into the two guys to kind of finish. Although the Americans went off with Mark Gaudette first, who absolutely destroyed the first part.
Yeah,
it was crazy to see him like just steam down the hill. But he was probably a minute and a half ahead of anyone, which was crazy.
Easy. 2 minutes, if not 2 minutes. Yeah, because the next person was Lindsay Webster, and she was not moving. She was not moving slow either. Do you know what I mean? And then it was a bit of a gap, Miriam, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, it all got off quite hot. The Americans, the Russians, the French, all sort of the top three athletes sort of racing. The Canadians, obviously, for that first section. So, Nikki came over the cargo net, tagged me. And then we had that section we were talking about earlier. So the hard up, run, trudge down, up, run, up. The two carries. I think I did two carries, a block wall, and another just simple net, I think. I think that's all I had to do. But it was about 4 miles of just pure freaking pain. Yeah. At this point, actually, Das had a big lead. So I think it was whoever was on their section. Oh, Mark did their section, didn't he?
Yeah.
So I had to chase down Das, which I didn't quite manage to do on the actual segment, but I managed to take nearly a minute and a half out of him. So Becky went for them on the last section. And I think I gave you, 3 minutes to catch Becky up or whatever?
Yeah, it was a fair little way. She went quite early, and then there was another team between us. The second French team were between us who went in between. Yeah, probably about 3 minutes I had to chase her down.
But you had, although I probably had the hardest physical section, you had probably the hardest section to complete because you had basically all the technical obstacles and a spear.
Yeah, which was pretty fun. But yeah, so literally once Jack tagged me, it was into Atlas carry, then I did Olympus, then it was a bit of a trudge on the sand all the way to the barbed wire. Then I had the rig.
Multi-rig. Which, can we just point out the multi-rig? How cool that multi-rig was, the fat ropes.
Yep. So it was rings, two fat ropes, rings, which was pretty great. And those ropes, the amount of people I saw came off because they just tried to do their normal ring technique.
Yeah.
So many.
Yeah.
If you go back and watch the men's highlight video, see how Ryan Atkins does it?
Yeah.
That is the fastest way.
100%.
Arm to arm, side to side. You even see the other guys do it all with a swing motion, and they're much slower than Atkins did it. But we've also got videos on our Instagram of doing it side to side.
Yeah, we have. Yeah,
we have. That's the way I did it in both of the events. It was just really quick.
So, at what point did you see Becky on this team race then?
So when I left the Atlas, I could see the French racer in front of me. I made it a point of trying to overtake them before I left the flats. So I managed to do that probably about halfway along the running. Then I did Olympus, went through, ended up going through the rig. As soon as I come off the rig, I could see at the top of the hill, somebody just disappear a little bit further up. Because it was, you had to climb up and then it was straight down to the rope. And I thought, right, there's my next target. Let's go. I didn't even know it was Becky. I didn't know where she was by then. I couldn't see. It started getting dark about that time, and all you could see was the back of the tops.
Yeah.
There was no flag on the back, so I could just see writing, but I couldn't read it. It was too far away. As soon as I got pretty much to the edge, I'd made up a bit of distance, and then I could see it was Becky disappearing down the hill as I was probably about 100 yards behind by then. And I was like, okay, it's Becky. I'll open up down the hill. So I literally just shot down the hill. She just started climbing the rope as I jumped on the rope. We pretty much came off the rope together, lined up for our spear together. And I thought, right, this put this away. This is for the team. This isn't just for me. I got a hit. Woo! After Jack had basically told me if I didn't hit, I was dead to him.
I did say that.
And so I was like, right, bang. Straight in the middle, I was happy with my throw and I was off. Again, I kind of just left it behind, but I could see over my shoulder Becky disappear into the burpee zone. And I was like, right, she's missed. Cool. Let's try and see if we can catch anyone else. I think the only other person was already on the rig by the time I'd got to the hoist. And I was like, oh, unless they're going to come off. I was like, right, let's just get this hoist up. Let's just do these last bits. Don't come off the rig. Make it through. So, yeah, pretty much just made it through everything pretty easy. Across the finish line, arm in arm with Nikki, because Jack hadn't made it back. Still in the middle of the desert trying to get back on the ride.
We were stuck in a truck, which is probably very not insurance there at all. Scary.
But I thought the concept of that whole race, having the three legs and splitting the people up, because the way Spartan have done team events in the past, they normally have them at every championship, which is crazy that they just have them at championships and not in normal, I would say. I would love to have these in normal races. But
a team race would be cool after the sprint on a Saturday, wouldn't it?
It'd be great. Just like one event a year. Just make it team weekend. It'd be great. Yeah. But to split it up, to actually have one leg each, like they do in other races. I thought that was perfect instead of all three of us doing the same thing.
The only downside I saw was the fact that I, and then they might change this, what I would have liked to have done is if somehow you guys would have looped back round to me so we could do the last segment together.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, in this particular race, if we'd all had to do a spear, then the multi rig, yeah, that would have been cool.
Well, what I would have preferred is if they had gone, we'll take all the ropes off the slip wall.
Yeah, you've got to go all together.
Yeah, you all meet at the slip wall, yeah. And you've got to make it over that slip wall together, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that would be super fun. I think that would add a bit of a team element. I don't see the point of putting us all on that rig together just because there's so many.
Yeah.
If there's
giggles.
Yeah. I just think that if they could have like specific obstacles, which could be team orientated, like a wall or something hard for us to get over, that would be ideal. They've done it before. They did it on the Spartan TV show. They had like the big teams, didn't they, on NBC?
Yeah.
That was very team orientated. So Spartan, we would love to see more team orientated events happening.
100%.
Per se. Thank you. So that is our little review of our race and the event itself. Would you go back, Jack, and race again if it's there?
I've been asking the same question to myself for the last 4 days. I think I would.
Yeah,
I think I would. I think I'd like to give it another go, definitely.
Yeah, same. I would definitely love to give it a go. Obviously, a little bit of unfinished business. And now we kind of know the race. Training would be a lot easier. I would definitely know what to train for and what my weaknesses are on that kind of terrain, which would be ideal.
I would go to a stair stepper in the gym and just throw a load of sand over it.
Sprinkle what, salt bay the sand?
Yeah, just spray it on every footstep, just throw sand on.
No, brilliant. Well, we are actually going to talk to some locals, some expats who have made their home in Abu Dhabi, who did the event, to hear their views on the event and also chat to a new world champion from the age groups as well. So stay tuned, we're going to chat to those guys next. So we are joined by Simon and Lottie Pepper. They are residents of the UAE in Abu Dhabi, but expats hailing from Great Britain. How are we doing today, guys?
We're good.
Excellent. So we're chatting to you kind of about the impact of Spartan Race World Championships during and after the fact. So obviously Spartan Arabia operates out there and puts on races all throughout the thing. How was this style of race compared to a normal Spartan Arabia event? Is this more grand scale, or are they always like this? Are they always in the dunes? Are they always deadly?
They're not as deadly as that. I don't think there's much that has ever been as deadly as that.
No.
We've had a race in the series in Sharjah a few years ago. It's in the dunes, but it's not the dunes like that. It's just undulating soft sand still, but none of the climbs we did. Okay. And then we had another event that went down in history in this area was the Middle East Championships in 2018.
Yes.
Which was in a place called Hatta, which is the Hajar Mountains, very mountainous, and it was a beast. That was calculated at 21K and was actually 30K.
just a little difference.
Yeah, and it will go down as a super hard race as well, but nothing like Liwa. It was just, I think the scary thing was watching the elites cross the line on Friday night and seeing these. Yeah. And it was like, I really don't want to be watching this. I'm going to go out there completely neutral. But no, all these people crossing the line, dead. I think Miriam, the French female, Miriam Guyebrasso, was the only one who had a smile on her face. But I think she's definitely got a smile on her face, whether she's in pain or whether she's enjoying herself.
Oh, yeah. Miriam just races with a smile nonstop. It is pretty crazy.
Nobody else looked like that.
I certainly did not look like that when I crossed the line. I was gasping for air and my legs were screaming. So it was pretty good. But obviously in the Middle East, you do have general Spartan events. You've got Tough Mudder events out there. I believe one just happened this weekend, just gone.
Yeah.
So
just
another one. So the general events are a bit more standard on kind of different terrain, not as deadly as this then. So obviously there was a lot of talk before the event. Maybe people who were local would have a bit more sand experience. But how many times like do you guys go and race on dunes like that or something similar? Not too – no, no.
Well, you saw the distance. It's not,
yeah.
It's not like a couple of minutes away from where we are. If we want to do mountain training, it's 2.5 hours. If we want to go into anything soft and sandy, what, about 45 minutes to something soft? But dunes like that, we have to drive hours.
And you've got to be careful where you go as well, because as a runner, you're nothing compared to people driving around on quad bikes and cars. And so you've got to be, there's that little problem as well.
Yes, there was many a quad bike and many a car the evening before the event, which kept everybody slightly awake. But true. So you do have to be safe out there when you're going out into the desert. But it was an epic location. How do you think, like an event of this scale, obviously the World Champs, first time it's been held outside of America, what kind of effect do you think this is going to have on OCR in the UAE or the Middle East as a whole? Do you think it's going to improve it? Because we really see obstacle course racing happening in a few places in around the Middle East, but not overly. But UAE seems to be like the hotbed for OCR. You've got a few different style of races. Do you think it's going to help with people getting into gyms, people wanting to train OCR or for other events around it? How do you think that's going to affect it?
Well, hopefully we have got a few teams. I think our first Spartan race here was 2016
in Dubai.
And then little teams have been sprouting up here, there, and everywhere. Also, specific gyms have started evolving, and on the rest of the world looking in, it's probably a very small scale. Like whenever I race in Central Europe, Czech Republic or Slovakia, these guys are born OCR racers. The suits and the tops and the track suits and everything is OCR.
Yeah,
we probably look like a very, very small fish in a big pond. But within the UAE, there are, and the Middle East, Oman, I know a few guys who've got gyms there.
Yep.
Kuwait. On the rest of the world, we look small, but here it is quite a big community.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's good. The World Championships can only be a good thing. Yes, behind the scenes and the politics and some of the politics that went on and didn't go on, I think it could have been a better run event, better advertised. There was things that could be better. Obviously, the turnout wasn't what we wanted. We wanted everybody else to come. We wanted the Killians. We wanted the VJs. We wanted the guys from the UK. We wanted a lot of European races, but we can't just blame COVID. I think there was other things that stopped people coming.
No, definitely. I think a lot of people made their own choice, either to go or not to go. You see by kind of the results in like top 20 of the elite that Europeans kind of put themselves up there within the top 10, definitely. Missing some big names from the US, VJ, Killian, Ryan Woods. I know Ryan Woods tried to make a last minute little get over here, but it didn't happen. I don't know, travel is a factor, but like you say, it's not the biggest thing. You just have to do quite a lot of tests. I think I've been PCR tested about 17,000 times just to get in and out of England. It wasn't too bad, actually. Once you got to the airport and stuff, it actually was the smoothest kind of thing. Passport, bang, I'm in. It's all good. So, yeah, you're right. It does make it slightly easier, but the event itself, from like an outsider looking in, especially if you're seeing like maybe the Facebook videos, the Instagram stuff, it was a pretty epic scale event. Like you said, there was stuff that could be tweaked, changed. There's probably like a lot of information about the sleeping arrangements that were on site, little bits and bobs that were out there that Spartan could change up for future references if the event was to happen again in the same location. We don't know, maybe. But yeah, for yourselves, obviously, you're pretty deep in the health and fitness industry within Abu Dhabi. For yourself, Lottie, obviously, you're kind of like a young athlete. How was it having a World Championships at your home, basically, or your home location?
I think it was really good. Obviously, we didn't have to travel very far, and right now deal with everything that comes with traveling. And it was nice because I knew that at the finish line, there was lots of people there to kind of give me that final push. And obviously, when we got to kind of the halfway point at the bottom of that dune where the rope climb was and the sphere, that was kind of the halfway point. Obviously, people could stand around there. So I think it was just nice to know I had quite a big support system there as well. When I definitely needed it.
Yeah, no, that was great. I think Spartan did made a really good choice by having that second loop go out from the festival area and the first loop come in, just because it gave people that little bit of connection with their like support network, like you're saying, like your dad, friends and stuff. They could obviously give you a bit of a G up, because that second loop was pretty tasty, let's say. And especially the climb straight out of the spear. I was not liking that halfway up, but it was a leg burner. Just before we delve into your race, Lottie, so Simon, just from your point of view, how do you think it's going to affect, do you think people in the UAE are going to start taking up OCR now because they've seen this, like especially maybe age groupers and that kind of thing? Do you think it's going to be a bit more of a spark for them?
I'd like to think so. I run a couple of boot camps as well as my PTs, and one of my clients, I took him out on a trail run a couple of weeks ago, or he did a trail race, and he's like, why have you never shown me this stuff before? Like, I've been running on roads for years and it's so boring compared to this trail stuff. So I got him to sign up for the age group. I think it was his second Spartan, his first beast. And not just your regular beast, really, a bit of a tasty beast. And he was, I think he finished in 4:04, hated every second of it like the rest of us, but he can't wait for the next one. Again, pre-race, pre-World Championships, if the advertising had been there and we could have got more outsiders to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think now it's happened, you've got to actively push the videos and push the Instagram videos. Look what we did. Look at this. Look at that. And obviously having Charlotte win the World Championships, it's hopefully going to push a lot of people her age who follow her or follow me. It's like, oh, well, I can do that. I'm going to have a go at that. But we have to do it ourselves as well. We have to actively sell the sport, you know, and put it across people. And like, you'll understand this. I don't understand how people couldn't enjoy doing what we do. Like, it's the most fun thing in the world, you know.
Yeah, it is super fun, especially when you do a brutal but extremely amazing course like that one. Probably about 4 or 5 times I saw myself just looking up from my cave of pain to look around at the scenery like, oh, wow, this is pretty amazing, especially on the salt flats when you could just look out and then you crested like the top. You could just see for miles and miles of sand dunes. It is pretty amazing. And you're right, OCR, especially I've been to some pretty crazy places that I don't think I'd have ever have traveled to if I wasn't going for an obstacle course race. The middle of the desert probably being one of them. But yeah, so hopefully with the information that's out there now, they've released the Elite Men's highlight video. Spartan have. They did a nice job with that per se. And then they're going to put the women's one out as well. Just quickly, how was it advertised? Because obviously age group didn't have any qualification, and they said that quite late on. How was it advertised, like, in country? Because I really thought age group would be absolutely stacked, because load of locals would want to just jump in there, do it for the event. But was it overly advertised? We didn't really see much advertisement until we left Abu Dhabi, and then it was only 30 minutes away in, like, the little hotel area. That's where we started seeing some banners.
No, so definitely not over-advertised, under-advertised, if anything. And not going into the politics of it, being in the sensitive country that we live. Some of the bodies had the drive to be able to advertise it massively, and there was advertising campaigns. But again, when the Middle East Championships was on a few years ago, you couldn't go to the cinema without the Middle Eastern Championships Spartan video being cast, which I was part of the video then. We did a run through Hatta to promote it.
Yeah.
There was nothing this time.
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff they need to do, really. They need to get it out there. But like we say,
when you speak to Spartan Arabia, and when you speak to the guys from Spartan US, nobody was aligning the stars, you know? So I don't know what happened behind the scenes of my meager pay grade, but it could have been advertised more. I think the other big thing, like you say about the age group getting the races just to come and do it, is it was the worst weekend to run that race.
Yeah.
We've got Grand Prix now, F1, the week before. It was the 50th National Day weekend.
Yes.
It was also the Rugby Sevens, which, as an expat in the Middle East, the Rugby Sevens has been going for, I don't know,
years and years.
Yeah.
And it's one of the most iconic things that goes on in this area.
Yeah.
So fit guys, fit ladies who play rugby or watch rugby or enjoy rugby or like beer, they're all at the Rugby Sevens. So you go, do you want to run 21 kilometers in the desert, or do you want to sit around and watch rugby and drink beer?
To be fair, that was the last thing I did when I left the Middle East. I went to the Rugby Sevens in Dubai, and then I flew out home. So it was a pretty good weekend, to be fair. But I would have loved to run in the desert instead of drink beer and chill under the most cool shade. Brilliant. So, Lottie, let's have a little chat with yourself about your race. And like your dad's already said, like, the impact of you winning a world title and also just taking part in the race itself. We'll have a little chat about how you think that's going to help youngsters, because all you guys down in like the 14 to 17, it was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, all you guys down in those age ranges, like the guys and the girls, are really like putting on a show for the youngsters, like 10-year-olds, 11-year-olds who are thinking, well, am I going to do football? Am I going to do this? Am I going to do that? It's always great to see youngsters excelling at this kind of sport, because it really does help more youngsters want to take part. So let's hear about your race, Lottie. How did it start? How did it go? Did you feel prepared?
I think it was okay. As soon as we got into that soft sand, though, because obviously you were straight into it straight away, and I was obviously trying to run, and we'd gone through like the technique of how to run in soft sand. Like, I wasn't completely clueless, but all I thought straight away was I should have maybe gone to the desert for a little run once or twice. I was like, oh God, I'm going to struggle with this. But it was, as soon as we got over those first few dunes, we were into that. We saw the flat for the, I think it was the monkey bars, maybe. I was like, oh, so maybe there is going to be some flat. I didn't manage to get the monkey bars, though. I thought they were pretty far apart compared to what has been on like the past two races that we've had here. So as soon as I didn't get those, it kind of knocked me back a bit. And I think I was, until I got to that halfway point, I managed to get obviously the rope climb, and then I got the spear. That then kind of boosted me for the second half. Also just before that, was it just before? Yeah, just before at the multi-rig, you managed to catch up to me. And I think hearing you go, come on, Charlotte, then kind of gave me that extra push,
yeah,
as
bit
well,
push,
which I definitely needed because the second half was just horrific. Like that last maybe 5 kilometers just felt like they were never going to end. It was just like, when are we ever going to get to the top of that big dune?
Yep.
And then finally, and then right at the end, I think I was just exhausted, to be honest. Really, I think that was the longest time I've ever taken to do the Hercules hoist. I felt like I was there for about an hour. I was just completely burnt out. And then didn't manage to get the monkey in the middle, did the penalty loop. And then that last, yeah.
That loop was pretty tasty.
And then that slip wall, I just looked at it and I was like, I really can't do this. Had a bit of a... There was a lot of tears throughout the race, but I think the most tears came out because it was just like, you've got one more thing to get over.
So close.
And I was like, I'm so tired.
Yeah.
But then you were at the side and... there was a few others at the side like, no, come on, Charlotte, you can do this. Managed to get it on my second try, I think it was. And then finished. And it was just, I think I'd used every water stop. I'd been taking gels, but I was just so dehydrated. And obviously, like everyone, the cramp in my legs, and it was just awful. Absolutely awful. Everyone's like, oh, did you enjoy that? I was like, no, horrible. But no, I was so happy to finish. And like I said, finishing and being able to have that support system of my mom, my brother, friends, because they haven't been able, dads, they haven't been able to come see any of our races this season anyway, just because of restrictions. So having more people there after nearly 5 hours of absolute hell was it was really, really good.
No, great to hear. What a you toughed it out then all throughout the course. Like you said, Spartan did mix up with a few of the obstacles, like your general ones, like your monkey bars. I think this is more of kind of an American thing. We have it a few times in the UK. When it goes up from super sprint beast, they change up the monkey bar style to go a bit more up and down. They'll change up the rig to make it slightly harder. So they did throw a few things at everybody that would make a bit of a difference. They added in the ropes to the rig. So a lot of people on the second day just coming off just to maybe a lack of understanding or a lack of a technique on ropes, how to do it. So, yeah, that was a tough one. Hitting the spear, though, I'm sure that was a massive point because we all know how that feels when it sinks. You're like, oh, no, burpees.
I was just thinking, I can't do burpees before I have to tackle this massive spoon.
I think I was at the top of the dune just before we went on the camber. And Yushi was at the spear and I turned around and I saw her jump up and I saw her mum go, yes! But for the next, I was super happy. And for the second half of the race, like you say, that was the pain cave area. And every time I got to this point of like, oh my God, I can't go on, all I could remember was her hitting the spear. I was like, yeah, let's go. Any small positive to take, I was like, yes.
No, that's great. That's really, really good to hear. Especially, I guess it's amazing for you guys to be able to like see each other on a race, especially such a big race like that, to be able to, for yourself, Simon, to give a lot of you encouragement, which really helped by the sounds of it, which is amazing to be out there and do that together. So it's a great little thing.
Yeah.
So, Lottie, how does it feel to be a world champion in your age category?
I think so many people have asked me that and I still just have the same answer, but I don't think it's quite sunk in yet. Like even when I went into school the following Monday, because I took Sunday off because I was just a bit tired.
Don't worry about that.
And I went and everyone was like, oh, congratulations. And I was like, it was almost like I'd forgotten what I'd done. I was like, oh, yeah,
It's a bad dream.
I was like, oh. Yeah, it was just... I could watch the video over and over again of when I went up to go get the Delta and they were calling out my name. It was just amazing. Yeah.
No, it's amazing. It's really good. In your age category, obviously, yourself won. We had Libby Joyce. She's from the UK as well. She took second in that age cat, which is amazing to see you two girls up there on like the world stage. Out of anybody that could have made the trip, you girls toughed it out and proved yourselves at that level, which is amazing to see. So where's next for you guys? Is it? I know there's a race in Saudi Arabia next in January. Are you thinking about doing that one? What's
So obviously there's not just COVID restrictions for Saudi, but there's restrictions
for every restriction.
So they're supposed to be making it easier. We did. Me and George Crew actually did a race in Saudi a couple of years ago.
Yep.
And it was at altitude, a Spartan race. Spartan got us our visas that time. So we just have to have a look at the restrictions. It should be possible for us all to do. They're changing the weekends in the UAE. We're now going to a normal Saturday, Sunday weekend.
Okay.
So unfortunately, what you find here is a lot of events on the weekend will overlap with something else. So that weekend was Decafit and Spartan same day. Decafit was here in the UAE, so obviously it was going to be a lot cheaper to just be here.
Yeah.
And Spartan was in Saudi. It's now changed that Decafit is on one day and Spartan's on the other. So the possibility of doing both. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, he's like, oh, my legs.
And then the thing about here is, unfortunately, unlike the UK and Europe and US, is that, again, because of politics or whatever, on red tape, it's harder for them to go, right, this is this season. We're going to have a race in Oman. We're going to have a race in Bahrain. We're going to have a race. We just have to wait and see when that next race gets advertised. So it's normally5minute.com.
Ah, well, there you go. Yeah, I was messaging George, like, when are you going to have any races? I've not seen anything happen out there yet. And he was like, it's hopefully going to happen soon.
Yeah.
But yes, well, good luck with the season, all the rest of the races this year, guys. Hopefully you absolutely crush it. And we look forward to seeing you both at more championship events, if it be European champs in the UK this year or next year, sorry.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll see you both there. And then maybe at the world, maybe back in the desert. Yeah. You never know.
Maybe. The things are happening.
Yeah. Well, thanks a lot for your time, guys, today. Go and enjoy the rest of the day and probably watch the F1.
Yeah. Thanks, mate. See you later.